Well, holiday home and Airbnb owners in Christchurch say moves by the council to regulate their sector are anti-tourism and unfair. The council is moving forward with plans requiring short-term rental accommodation providers to apply for a one-off consent at a cost of at least $1,000. It's proposing a three-tiered consenting system, depending on how many nights per year a property is rented out. The plan changes to the district plan have come about after pressure from the motel and hotel sector, concerns over the impact of short-term rentals on the housing supply, and changes to neighbourhoods from the turnover of temporary visitors. In a moment, we'll hear from Sue Harrison, the director of Christchurch Holiday Homes, who manages 50 homes in the city and in Akaroa. But first, we welcome Sarah Templeton, chair of the Christchurch City Council Sustainability and Resilience Committee, also member of the Urban Development and Transport Committee. Kia ora, Sarah.
Kia ora, good morning, Catherine.
Tell us about this plan and how it would work, please.
Okay, so I guess the first thing is that we're not putting in new regulation at this point because they already exist. So the current district plan actually already requires a resource consent for unhosted holiday sort of short-term guest accommodation in residential areas. And that was put in the district plan after the earthquakes and has caused some issues already. So we currently have around 1,600 of these unhosted short-term guest accommodation that don't have consent, that are operating in residential areas but should have a consent. And so at one point last year, there was a complaint. We currently manage these on a complaint basis, sort of reactive, because we can't find out where they all are to start with. And there was a complaint to council from a neighbour, and council asked for some compliance from the operator and said, you need a resource consent. They applied for a resource consent. We said, no, actually, it doesn't meet what we're trying to do in the area. And it went to the Environment Court. The Environment Court granted the consent or directed us to, but said that we really need to look at our district plan and get ahead of the game, because when our current district plan was put in place, there really wasn't this proliferation of short-term guest accommodation in residential areas. And so it recommended that we front-foot it and keep some good rules in place to manage that.
So what is it that you're trying to achieve? Why do you want to be able to manage this way? What are the problems?
Yeah, so we've also had a series of deputations from residents in the suburban areas over time, especially those that are nearer the inner city, where they are really feeling the loss of sort of neighbourliness and community when new developments are going in, say more intensive developments, you know, four or five properties where there used to be one. And they're often being used mainly as Airbnbs in commercial space. And the residents have the effects of that. So they lose neighbours, they lose that community sense of feel. There's additional cars and those kind of things and late night arrivals. And so we've had a series of those kind of complaints, but also from the Motel Association and those hospitality players who have strict rules around what they can do, and they have to be in certain areas, and they're looking for a level playing field with these other commercial operators.
Can we deal with this in two parts? First, some of those suburbs. Are we talking about the likes of Merivale, Fendleton? What are the suburbs most affected?
Yeah, some of those, and some of the inner city ones as well. So there's zones which are now due for more intensification, or that's allowed, and quite a lot of the time that's happening and the places are being marketed for Airbnb as opposed to for residential. Yes, Fendleton, Merivale, some of those areas, but actually
St Albans and
1600.
Yeah,
St Albans is a key one where we've been getting complaints, but right across the city in Banks Peninsula.
On the question of the Hotel and Motel Association, what has been the rationale for responding to their call? Why do you see that as a valid call?
So some of these people are operating, or some of the owners of these might have a dozen or 20 of these properties. And so it really is a commercial operation. And just like a motel might have, you know, a dozen or 20 units, but all in one space in a commercial area or a mixed-use area, these people have sometimes, you know, a dozen or 20 properties, but spread around and don't have to follow the same rules as the motels, and so their expenses aren't as high and they're getting the benefit of that.
So what will happen with the three tiers? Who will pay what? And also, could you just explain the purpose of the consent? Is it A, revenue gathering, but B, more about managing, right? I think you've explained you want to be able to control. Could you explain, first of all, what the three tiers are and who will play what?
The tiers, and just remember, I'm an elected member, not a planner, and so I don't have all of the technical stuff to hand. So the tiers are based on the number of days that someone might be hosting. And so let's remember that this is for unhosted, where it's a whole home or a whole unit that's going out. So we actually don't have any problems, and we don't get complaints about people who have a bed and breakfast style one across.
All right. So if you're resident, if you're living in, really if you're living in your property, that this doesn't count. So as I understand it, if it's non, there's no one living there, it's straight out visitor accommodation. There's a tier between 61 to 180 nights. Yep.
That's right.
And so then another one more than 180 nights.
Yep. So what we're trying to do here is to say, well, it should be predominantly residential in a residential area, and it's good to have neighbours, and it's good for community resilience and community connectedness to do that. So the cut-off is kind of at about 180 days for that top tier.
And that's
so
a non-compliant...
1 to 60 days, if you're going, you know, if you live in your property most of the time, but you go away sometimes, or you go and spend a couple of months somewhere else and you're, you know, renting out your house or doing the short-term stuff, the weekends, up to 60 days, not a problem. One-off, easy resource consent, it won't be a problem. It's a one-off cost. The cost isn't revenue gathering. It only covers, for these kind of things, you're actually only allowed to cover the cost of processing.
Okay, so that's for up to 60 days. 61 to 180 nights a year would be classed as discretionary activity. And what will that enable the council to do?
So that enables us just to make sure that there's various rules around that to make sure that there's not additional loss of amenity over and above what you would expect from residents living there.
So it could be controls on noise or traffic, and if there are problems kind of with noise or traffic, you either comply or you could lose your consent?
There would be a compliance process for that. There would be a compliance process.
Okay. And more than 180 nights of non-complying activity, the council could only grant the consent if environmental effects were minor.
That's right.
All right.
Yeah. The thing is, though, we completely get that the Airbnb or short-term guest accommodation sector is a really valuable one for Christchurch. It allows visitors to have a range of options. And there's a whole pile of areas where it can still happen. So you can still have them in these residential areas as long as you're still being mostly residential and it's your kind of property that you're sort of letting out or allowing for someone like the Holiday Homes Place to manage for you. But also there's quite a range of still mixed use and commercial areas in Christchurch where this can happen without any problems at all for over 180 days.
I understand also that for that first tier up to 60 days a year, the council can't actually decline the application. It can apply conditions, but it can't decline. It's only at that highest level that they can decline. Look, do you have some sympathy for the Banks Peninsula landlords who are particularly upset about this? Obviously a high tourism area. Do you have some sympathy with their case that it's going to impact tourism right when tourism's already being impacted?
Well, it's really interesting because currently they need a resource consent. So they currently need one, but they don't have them. So they're currently not complying with the district plan rules. And so what this will do, if you've got a holiday home over there and you do short-term guest accommodation for up to 60 days, it's super easy. You just apply for this easy consent and you get it, no problem. If you want sort of half the year, you apply, but there's a few more conditions. But you have to remember that actually people live in Akaroa as well. It's not just the wealthier batch owners and those kind of things renting their homes out that are the issue here. People live in Akaroa and they deserve a community and a sense of community as much as anyone else. And as more and more homes get turned into short-term guest accommodation, they lose that sense of community and that resilience and the things that they can do in that space.
Thank you. Stay with us if you can. Sarah Templeton is Chair of the Christchurch City Council Sustainability and Resilience Committee and also a member of the Urban Development and Transport Committee. 17 past 9 on 9 to noon. We welcome Sue Harrison, Director of Christchurch Holiday Homes, who manages 50 homes in the city and in Akaroa. Good morning to you, Sue.
Morena, Catherine.
You're pretty riled up about this, I understand.
No, absolutely not. We're all on the same page as far as wanting what's best for Christchurch. And we also are expecting to have a level playing field. And we're also expecting to be involved in the process of finding out what is best for tourism in Christchurch, who comes and stays, and why do they stay, what do they need, alongside what does the community need. So we're just trying to push across to people that we're actually not in the same marketplace as motels and hotels. We offer a different product, and it attracts more people and different people to Christchurch. And we want what's best for our visitors alongside what we want what's best for the people that live here, which includes a bigger picture of what's going on with the Residential Tenancies Act, by the way, and various other things. So we just, you don't expect the planners to know everything there is to know about our marketplace, and we don't expect councillors to. So we'd just like more information provided and to find a way that actually works or is a win-win.
Well, the information's kind of out there, isn't it, as to what the consent rules are, and do you have a problem with them?
Well, what they've proposed, they've gone down a track where they've proposed the most restrictive regime in the country, and it's based on nightcaps, which are not likely to be brought in New Plymouth, very controversial, have been brought in Queenstown, but not nearly as restrictive as this. And if you look at Queenstown and Christchurch, are they the same? Have they been through the same sort of problems with earthquakes and, you know, you name it, earthquakes, floods, mosque attacks, a range of things where accommodation has been desperately needed that's not commercial-style accommodation. Vanessa, people come to stay. There's so much going on in Christchurch that needs a different style of accommodation that really isn't being taken into account.
Well, could you explain more what that is? Are you saying that Airbnb isn't just for tourists and tourist visitors to the city? What are you getting at there?
I'm saying visitors is an extremely broad term, and it should be more inclusive of people trying to move back to Christchurch from overseas, people coming here for 6 weeks at a time, people doing various options. A furnished accommodation is what we're talking about.
But hang on then, because the Airbnb concept that we understand would not be charged out at the rate, say, of a rental property. And I'm trying to understand what you're saying about the use of properties that are Airbnb or similar accommodations. Are you saying that in some cases these are being used like short-term rentals?
Definitely being used like short-term, it always have been. Our business morphed from providing temporary accommodation after the earthquakes, where, and that's why I'd like people to see a bigger picture. If you look back to then, there was an extreme shortage. Families needed to move around for 6 weeks while their home was repaired. Rates went up to, say, $500 a night. And we never charged that, but we just looked back and looked on and thought, this is terrible. And then we realised there was a demand for people who wanted to stay with their pets in our city, or they wanted to come to a tournament and bring grandma, that a home had the amenities and might be in the suburbs where commercial accommodation is not, and provides a different thing. So, of course, we started using other platforms, which includes Airbnb. And Airbnb is an extremely successful platform that's been able to sort of ubiquitously have its name.
Well, look, Bookabatch is another one. I'll give you another one. Bookabatch, right? We're talking about people who typically use these accommodations primarily for holidays or for family trips or group trips or, you know, going away with the boys or girls trips. You're talking about something different. You're talking about them as a semi-permanent accommodation backstop or a transitional accommodation. How significant is that in the market?
It's very significant, you know, in a situation where we've got people, and we're talking about mixed use is what we're talking about, anything from 2 nights to 6 months, and is the demand. So it varies a lot. And people come into the city and they might be here for work. They might need something
six months. Sorry to interrupt you, Sue. Wouldn't 6 months turn it into a straight-out rental property?
what happens is over 1 month, they're technically under the RTA rules, and it depends on their use, so it becomes a grey area. And, yeah, 6 months is under the RTA rules. So you're talking about morphing between two situations. What they want to regulate here is homes being used for short-term use, two nights or so on. But what they need to cater for is a marketplace that needs furnished homes from time to time for various reasons, whether there's been a flood or a fire or something and people have to move around the city.
But what confuses me, Sue, what confuses me is at that point I would have thought the property use is actually as a rental property. Not as a short-term visitor accommodation, and in that case, would it attract the same problem? Would it require the same consent?
Exactly. And if someone comes here for NASA for 6 weeks and stays in a rental property, should they be on a residential tenancy agreement, or are they a guest? I think they're a guest technically, and they don't want to sit there in a motel for 6 weeks. They want a home to live in with proper amenities of a home. They've come here during lockdown because they need to, they're an essential worker, they need a kitchen because all the restaurants are closed. There's so many reasons we need furnished accommodation.
So I guess what I'm getting to is that if you had a family move in for 6 months or even 3 months, why wouldn't you sign a periodic rental lease with them?
And we would.
Well, then how would that be captured by this? That's different legislation. How would it be captured by this?
Because the home would not be available if this regime was brought in. That does not make it viable for the owner to keep the home empty or available. There's not enough of demand for that.
Because of the time limit? Because of the time limit? Okay, pause, please. Can I come back?
And also, you can easily see how they're going to police nightcaps. Oh, that person stayed the night too long. What are we going to do? There would be ridiculous situations. That nightcaps is the wrong tool to use.
Okay.
And even the RMA is the wrong tool to use.
Can you pause? Can you pause? And I'll come back to Sarah. Sarah, has Sue got a point there? At a time in many cities where accommodation is at a premium, where people are needing short-term transitional accommodation for all sorts of reasons, including trying to buy houses at exorbitant costs, are you risking impacting on the flexibility of the short-term rental market here by having a night count as the way of doing this?
I don't believe so at all. So the short-term rental stuff is quite different to this short-term guest accommodation, and we do need flexibility. We found that after the earthquakes, and we were one of those families who had to move out for 5 months at one point, that we did sign a tenancy agreement.
Is that the answer? Just pause again, Sarah. Is that the answer? You could have one property that was consented for short-term accommodations a la Book a Batch or Airbnb, but you could equally sign a residential tenancy agreement for a period of time, and those days would not count towards your resource consent. Is that the way this is structured or not?
So I'm a planner, and that's the first time it's been raised with me, but I personally think that seems like a reasonable solution.
Okay.
And that's why we're going through a process. So we've had the early, where we got a range of views from the community and others around what types of things they would like to see addressed. We've got a proposal up, and then that goes through a really rigorous process with submissions open at the moment. It'll go through a hearings panel process, an RMA process, and then we'll go through, and then there'll be appeals probably to the court.
Okay.
And so that's why we have a robust process, so these kind of things get raised and they can be addressed.
Sue, can I come back to you again, and can we talk about some of the areas that we think of particularly as holidaying areas where the likes of Book a Batch might be very prominent? Akaroa would be one. There may well be others as well, whether it's Taitapu or some of the other lovely places in the district, or heading north over the Waimakariri River. Do you believe there are issues also with some of the more seasonal kinds of places where this could impact viability? What are the issues?
Not in our experience. We have owners who live in Akaroa, and Akaroa is a really good example of where people and holiday homes and communities exist side by side and, in relative harmony. So in one street there may be half holiday homes and half homeowners. Well, the homeowners are very connected over there. They have various groups and book clubs and whatever, and by all accounts it is a wonderful community to live in. People have gone there temporarily and stayed for their retirement and are picking up with buying holiday homes. So it's a really good example of it's not actually destroying the community.
Just back, though, to the overall question, there's some emails coming in here. There's no control on numbers, records of stay, noise or cars in Airbnb. By law, motels and hotels have to provide accessible access, keep records, etc. There is the point, Sue, that some are making that the sector, particularly the more commercialised end of it, is getting a free pass, and that may be impacting on residents, but it certainly doesn't equate to an equal playing field. Doesn't the consenting process begin to at least introduce some protections that people could turn to if necessary?
Well, it would be good if it did, and we would really welcome, we've long time been welcoming the arrival of what might be called a level playing field. And the government has a working group at work now. Obviously, they've had COVID to deal with in the meantime, but the working group is actively working on this because we have 88 or 82 councils around the country who are all grappling with this, and Nightcaps has not been successful, and this is the most severe form of Nightcaps they're proposing here. It's not even one of the options that was given to us in the submission process. And we do want to, you know, equate things and have it so that people have a choice of accommodation when they come to our city, because we've spent millions of ratepayers' money on various and government money on various facilities to attract tourists. So
thank you.
How do we make that work?
Thank you, Sue. Sarah, just back to you. Just remind us exactly where the process is again, please. It's out for consultation,
right.
Yes.
Yeah, so we did early engagement. So we haven't had formal submissions already. We've had some early engagement where people gave feedback on what they would like to see. It's open for submissions now until the 22nd of October. Then they'll be published, and then there'll be it's because it's an RMA process. And then everyone can see those submissions, and then so they can make an additional submission based on the ones that they've seen, so they can respond to other people's comments, if you like. And then that all goes to a panel, an RMA panel, and submitters can speak at the hearing. There's potential for mediation, all of those kind of things. The panel makes a recommendation to the Urban Development and Transport Committee, and the committee will make a decision, and then there's the opportunity for appeal.
Very quickly, if you would, because I think Christchurch has been in a different situation from some cities vis-a-vis its housing supply for some years due to the rebuild. Do you have a housing shortage in the city at the moment, or are you fairly well balanced?
We're fairly well balanced.
Okay.
We want more people living in the central city, and if we can encourage that short-term guest accommodation into the central city mixed zone, those kind of areas, that really helps the city in its rebuild and regrowth kind of phase.
Right. I thank you both very much for the conversation, Sarah Templeton and Sue Harrison.